Welcome to Brand Appeal, where we talk about brand storytelling in the digital age. In today's episode, I sat down with Rail CEO Nicholas Jeffrey to talk about branding and how Rail is going to change banking for small and medium-sized businesses around the globe. Hello, Nicholas. Thank you very much for joining me today. What do you want to be known for? What is your special sauce?
I sort of want to be known for where sense meets sizzle, because I don't think creativity on its own in this day and age cuts it. I think there's got to be the operational understanding and the delivery behind it. But I don't want to be an operator and I don't want to be a creative. Been a creative, been an operator, but I'd like to be known as where sense meets sizzle.
I think that that is definitely where your sweet spot, because you're right. You are right in the middle, a foot in each camp, and there's a lot of sizzle. Definitely a lot of sizzle.
Thank you. And also when you're in operational meetings, somebody's got to say, okay, everybody's had their say, now stop, we're doing this.
And you do, you know?
Yeah,
you know.
I hope so.
I want to go back to the beginning of your career, because the beginning of your career is quite fascinating for the Brand Appeal audience, because you were in branding. Can you tell me about your experience owning a branding company?
Yeah, I think the funniest thing is, why did I get into branding, or why did I get into marketing? So my father was in the British Army for, let's say, 35 years. He was a regimental sergeant major in the Grenadier Guards, these guys that wear red jackets and big furry black hats. That's all I'd known, ever known. Oh. So I was going to go into the army, and I took all my exams. I love physics, I love chemistry, and I was going to join a regiment called the Royal Signals, and they were based up in Harrogate, up in North Yorkshire. And I remember going up there in January and being woken up at 5 o'clock in the morning with my shorts and my trainers on, being asked to march around in the snow in the mid of winter. And I went, yeah, I'm not sure about this. And I went into the commanding officer's room and I said, sir, how do I get your job? And he said, you don't, son. He said, it will take you 25 to 30 years and a lot of exams, a lot of patience. I said, is there no fast track? And he went, nope, 25 years minimum. And I came out, I thought, I don't want to do this. So I came back down in the train on my own as a young sprog and called the army barracks and said, I've decided I don't want to be in the army. And then thought, hell, what am I going to do now? And the only other thing I could do was draw. And I thought, I know what, I'll go to art school. It's like complete yin and yang, army to art school.
Yeah.
And I went to our local art school, and term had already started, so I really wasn't able to get in there. And I stood outside the principal's office of the art school and said, I need to come in, explain the story. And he said, can you draw? So I said, yeah. He said, okay, draw me these four things. I'll be back in 15 minutes. I drew those four things. He said, yeah, okay, you can come in. Problem is, I then had to tell my father. So I went back to my father and said, Dad, I've made a decision. I don't want to go into the army. I want to go into design. He went batshit. He thought I was going to be an Afghan rebel smoking dope. He didn't speak for me about 6 months. But then I realized that I'd actually made the right decision. I wanted to go into global branding. But I actually couldn't draw. And I still sort of can't really draw. But what I was able to do is listen to what the client was trying to achieve, which was invariably a commercial issue, not an aesthetic issue. Mm-hmm. And I was able to understand what the business problem was and then say, is this sort of what you're looking for? And he'd go, yeah, something, yeah, like just like that. Then I would give that effectively as a written brief and a visual brief to somebody who could draw better than me. And then I would come up with visuals. And I applied that to Johnson & Johnson, Eastman Kodak at its peak, and even Reebok. So I've been involved in some spectacular branding pieces, but they've only been because I'm sort of approaching it from a completely different angle. I'm not going, okay, let's start. Which, do you like green or purple? No, that's irrelevant. Now just tell me what's the issue with your sales structure, and then let's work through to the branding architecture after that. So that's how I got into it, and that's why it sort of works.
So tell me about your definition of branding.
I think it's interdisciplinary. So I've got this idea of 360-degree marketing or 360-degree branding, because I think branding is the manifestation of the company and the brand and the products and the people. A great example is someone like UPS. If you look at a UPS van, they're brown, but they're immaculate. The drivers all wear shirts, the drivers all wear ties, they're all polite. And the reason they're successful is because you trust the brand and the drivers that they're going to take care of your package, because they take care of themselves. When you go to the UPS's worldwide headquarters, it's immaculate. Their planes are immaculate. Everything is immaculate. I believe that the UPS brand is clean, it's simple, it's dateless. Typographically, it doesn't need updating. It's beautiful. It looks a little German. I don't even care where it comes from, but it looks a little German. It looks like good, commercial, solid brand. But the brand manifestation, all the way down, right the way down to the drivers of the vans, work. And that's what I believe makes a brand. Not that it's the swoosh from Nike or the flag from British Airways or the naked woman flying with Virgin Atlantic or even the name Virgin Atlantic. It's right the way down to how Richard Branson delivers that brand across, right the way down to the train staff.
So it's every customer touch point.
Well, not even every customer touch point, because it can be every partner touch point. It can be every stakeholder touch point. You could be talking to an investor who doesn't care whether you sell shopping trolleys or airplanes, doesn't care. He's only looking at it for an investment, but he still needs to know that you are the right investment and the brand can help do that.
Now, you had a big hand in Rails branding. Tell me, what does Rails branding mean to you?
I sort of didn't actually have a big hand in it, but I've taken over stewardship of it.
Okay.
So I didn't come up with a Rail name. Mm-hmm. I was the person that said, is it registered? I didn't come up with the orange. Do I like it? Maybe, maybe not, but it doesn't really matter. It's the manifestation of the brand that's important. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. So I've had to make people decisions because those people do not fit the brand. And I'm not prepared to make compromises to the brand ethos because the individuals aren't right. I'd rather get rid of the people because the brand, I hope, is going to be there for the next 50 years. And the people could blow it up because they just don't have empathy with the brand. And that's my guiding principle. So no, I didn't create the brand. I didn't create the name. I'm in charge of the subtle bits with a marketing team. How that brand looks and how does it connect with me? If I put my hand over the corner of a website where the logo is, does this still look and feel different? Does it still have empathy with me? Because at the moment, you look at our competitors, every single one of their manifestations is exactly the same. You literally could put your hand over the logo on the website and you would not know whose website you're looking at. I'm trying to create a tonality or a tone of voice and a series of what I'd call brand furniture, which are the colors and the pictures and the tone of voice, so that people know it's Rail. People know it's different. People know it's us. I'm involved in the implementation. I haven't been involved in the brand. I like the brand. I like the name, but I think it needs to grow up, and that will take a little bit of time.
Well, it's interesting that you had said that your competition all looks the same, because Twitter put out a study saying that a lot of people can't identify brands unless the logo's there, because everyone is sounding the same due to... Yeah,
look at Coca-Cola. I can pick up that bottle without a piece of branding and I know it's a Coke. So the brand is not the brand is not the logo or the icon. You know, somebody... I did this wonderful exercise where the automotive industry, if you drew three circles, they probably know it's Audi. They don't need the five. They only see the three. If you draw a circle with another circle inside it, they probably know it's BMW without the crosshatch. So there's things that you can do around the provenance of the brand and the construction of the brand without showing them the entire brand. You know, when we talk about our website, I say, let's not do library photographs of people shaking hands to show trust, but let's not be so obtuse that we show a tree. We've started to introduce some ideas where all of our images are in what I would call duotone. So they are a blend of four color with a predominance of orange, for example. Now, every shot's going to look like that. So I now don't need to say rail because they associate subliminally the orange overtone to the photographs to us, because it's definitely not square, it's definitely not stripe, it's definitely not nuvé, it's orange, it's rail. So if we can capture the orange like Kodak captured the yellow, we don't need to say rail. So that's the grown-up part of branding, which I sort of a bit upset because I think it's been thrown out with the bathwater when digital came along, because I don't think there's that level of sophistication there. It's probably because I'm old. A lot of that sentiment's been thrown out because people just aren't thinking beyond the brand, and it needs it, I think.
Well, that's what Twitter was kind of saying, is that everyone is using the analytics and the data, the same analytics and the same data, to have a tone of voice, so they all have the same tone of voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's no personality.
And also, I think we're using data as a crutch, and we're sort of saying, oh my gosh, look, everybody is using desktop, so we've got to make sure that we're focusing on desktop. We can't just focus on mobile. I thought it was mobile, but we're going to focus on desktop. And I go, yeah, hold on a second though. But now look at the next chart. Look at the age of our audience. Average, 65. So we're not going after the millennials, or the millennials aren't there at the moment. Most of our audience are people that are using our brand to generate more money, to be able to sell on the product, not necessarily to use the application itself. But look at the age, that would make sense, because they're looking for secondary income. So don't get thrown off the scent, because they're not the users of the application. The users of the application are certainly the SMEs and are probably the millennials and young parents. But the people who are currently using it are not that group. Now, if we looked at the data blindly, we would fall off a cliff the wrong way. So I would countenance people to say, look at the data, but stand back from it and get, I hate the word, so I apologize, get a more holistic view of what's going on, and then make decisions with the validation of data. Data is not the single point of truth.
Instead of letting the data drive the ship, you drive the ship and utilize data to help you figure out if you're on the right course.
100% right. Or you try something new and then see what happens to the data. Mm-hmm. Take it from orange to green and see if anybody even notices. And then orange is not so important. But keep testing the parameters and see what's worked. Because the nice thing is, you know, when I was in branding, looking after these global brands, to do a piece of research would take you 6 months. Mm-hmm. The boat has already crashed into an iceberg by the time you get the results back. Social media and the internet allows you to get responses the next hour. That's the agility of research now, which we didn't have 30 years ago. So I'm saying now use that, run that phrase, run that headline, change that headline, change that color, see what happens. And then we can go back to exactly where we are. We can keep pushing this envelope until we find what works.
Now, I know what you wanted to be known for, but what do you want Rail to be known for?
Honest, transparent, great value financial services. Mm-hmm. I look at it at the moment, and I look at my bank statements, and I look at my charges. I have no idea what they're for.
I know.
It irks me when I see how much these people take. And I go, you know, I come to England and my card doesn't work, so I have to find a bank, and then I've got to find identity. And I just think they're putting hurdles in front of me to do what I want to do with my money. And I have to draw out cash so I can take my daughter to lunch because the damn credit card won't work because they don't expect me to be in the United Kingdom. They don't know me. They don't care who I am. I'm a number. So I want Rail to use the application part of its suite with the customer's permission to know the customer. I want Rail to know the customer better than the banks do. Mm-hmm. That's my whole raison d'etre. That's my reason for being. Because once I know Nicholas Jeffrey, I can say, interesting, this is his profile, this is where he travels, these are the products he needs. Yes, he has got a Hungarian residency. Yes, he's in Vancouver. He happens to be in the United Kingdom, and he flew through Munich to get here. But I'm not going to stop his credit card because I'm saying, I don't know why you're in London, Nicholas, so I'm going to stop your credit card. They're going to say, yeah, that's sort of usual. And some of the big financial services brands do it, but I would say it's less than 1%. So I want to use the app to know the customer, to give the customer better product at better pricing with a better risk profile and a better financial concierge.
What if you're stranded in London? none of your cards work.
No. So a perfect example of how I think this works, I left Budapest and had breakfast, paid for it on a card. Arrived in Munich, had lunch, paid for it in card. Arrived in Vancouver, tried to check into a hotel and they said, your card is blocked. I said, it can't be blocked. It's blocked. So I called the bank and they go, it can't be you. And I was saying, trust me, it's me. And really arsy. Can we just go through a couple of transactions? So how do you have breakfast in Budapest and lunch in Munich and dinner in Vancouver? I said, it's called an aeroplane.
Yeah.
And now I'm justifying my expenditure with my money to an Indian call center. And I'm going, this is not how it should be. So I'm saying that Rail is basically going to know, even if it's a database, and we pull it up and the guy goes, hi, Nicholas. Can I call you Nicholas? Yes. Hi, Nicholas. How are you? Perfect. Okay. I can see you left Budapest this morning. Great breakfast. Munich. Clearly, that's where you transited through. Can see that for lunch. And you now want to check into the hotel. Absolutely. Really sorry why we checked it, but we needed to verify it. Do you feel comfortable with a couple of security questions? Because we want to protect your money.
Yeah.
Completely different attitude. That's where I think Rail should be. And we can use the data we collect with a client's permission to drive better decisioning.
Because you're having to balance this, protecting their money and their identity and providing them with great service and the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. And the moment, the Canadian system does not benefit the fintech market. Mm-hmm. There is not an open banking architecture. And by law, that will come in around 2023. So it's fairly soon. But at the moment, if I'm a merchant, I might want to increase my credit card facility. I go to the bank and I go, la, 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 I'd like the new credit card facility. And they take a bit of time. In the meantime, I find this other company called Pink Flamingo to increase my credit limit, but they have to go to the main bank to get my information. The main bank does not have to give it to Pink Flamingo. Mm-hmm. So Pink Flamingo never gets the information to make a decision to give me the credit loan. Rail doesn't need that because we have the data. So all I say to Mr. Merchant is, are you happy for us to open up your data analytics with your permission to be able to assess that and give you an accurate risk analysis and product and loan? Yes, I can do it in an hour.
And when can they have their money by?
Same day. So that's because I know the individual better than the banks. Mm-hmm. And I can literally look there and go, great, you had a fantastic month last month, Mr. Baker. Clearly, this is why you need more money, because you sold more product last month than you did the month before. I'm looking at his invoices.
And you know exactly
I can see why you need the money.
We're still paying these bank fees, but we don't have tellers at the bank.
So Rail's got three bits. So it's got this super app, which helps with your productivity. That's called Rail App 2. And the middle's called Rail Pay, which is a merchant payment platform. And then we've got Rail Financial, which is this future of us building a bank. But in the middle, just on the merchant payment platform, you go into any merchant, you say, how much does Square or Stripe or Nuvei, or how much do they charge?
Moneris.
You look at that and you go through this list and the merchant's almost embarrassed because he goes, oh, well, hold on, there's the charge. Oh, yeah, hold on a second. There's another charge. Oh, hold on, no, there's a rebate. I'm quite sure what that's for. Oh, and there's another charge. Hold on. Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, I have no idea. I think it's that much. And he's adding it up. So what we said is, okay, if we've got transparency and we say cost plus zero, what we get charged on your transaction of $1,000 is what we charge you. We don't need to mark it up. Because what we'll do is we'll say, now, do you need your money, Mr. Merchant, back the same day? Yes. How much is that going to cost me? 1%. So you get my money back the same day for 1%. Yes. How much have you just saved me? About 1.7%. Okay, I'll do it. Because how much? I'm still in the money. So if we build it around that, and then we can put his money onto a card, then they can use the card. So I think that's all branding for me. Because he's now going to be carrying around a Rail card. And that Rail card needs to look like, wow, what is that? It's a piece of plastic, but wow, what is that? There was a brand in the United Kingdom called Goldfish. I moved bank accounts because the card was so pretty. It was a white card with this spiraling carp goldfish on it. I went, I've got to have one of those. And it looked, more important than American Express Black Card. So I think branding's really important. Branding can attract people, for sure.
My first cell phone was because I like the, which now TELUS owns their branding, but it was animal on the white background, clean, witty, kind of fun. There's something at the time, and then TELUS bought them and has kept that branding for 20 years.
Yeah.
It can matter.
With the TELUS branding, it's a good example because the choice of the animal according to the topic is sort of good as well. Mm. So the one that looks after TELUS home security is this baby tiger because it's sort of got a feminine touch to it. It doesn't look really aggressive, but it can bite you if it needs to. And it's home security. So I think that subliminal connection between a brand and the service has got to be made. I think you've got to create that link. Otherwise, the two just don't feed off each other.
And branding is really about how your customer feels by being aligned with your brand.
A couple of really big things now, which can sway that. You know, you take the environment and overlay that onto a brand, like for Persil and for Unilever, or safety for their detergents with children, you overlay that onto the brand. So there's so many things for consumers to grapple with now. If you can elevate the brand up, which they know it comes from you, so there's this stack of permissions that I'm going to assign to your brand before I consider the product. Mm-hmm. If I go to, you know, take Virgin as an example. If I use something within the Virgin portfolio, I know it's going to be funky, it's going to be creative, it's going to be digital, it's going to be young and hot, it's going to be entrepreneurial. Doesn't matter what the brand does, I know I can attribute those things to it. That's brand excellence,
yes.
Which is drop. So the idea is to get rail up there to be a compelling brand decision. Mm-hmm. Anything we add into that, they go safe, transparent, trustworthy, all of those things that we want to attribute to the Rail brand instantly cascade down onto anything new we put into the portfolio, which helps the consumer over the hump.
Now you kind of bring up a little bit of a question that I've been asking people because of the amount of social issues, movements that have been going on and brands aligning themselves or trying to jump on a trend. Does that affect a brand if their real brand doesn't align with the movement that they attribute themselves to? For example, let's say a company decides they want to jump on the Black Lives movement, but they don't have a Black employee. Is that going to affect their brand?
Yeah. I would like to always build a brand around brand attributes, not try and get a free ride on somebody else's cause. Mm-hmm. I think highly of Black Lives Matter. I think highly of equality. I feel highly of gay rights, all of those things, but I don't necessarily need my flag being flown next to theirs. Mm-hmm. But the way we hire people should take all of those things into account. The way that we decide to make recruitment decisions, development protocols, even pushing people up through the feed chain of the organization should be based on those things. I don't have to march next to them to implement them in the company. Mm-hmm. I can highly respect what they're doing, but I'm not going to take a brand reputational risk when I don't need to. If you take equality, Black Lives Matter, gay rights, and you put all of those into the ethos and the charter of the company, you can abide by those rules without going onto the street. So I think that's more powerful because you're showing the people that within the embodiment of Rail, you actually are very concerned about those issues and you're going to implement them.
Mm-hmm. But should the brands, like when Nike took the knee, should brands be involved in those or should they kind of stay away from movements?
I think, unfortunately, it's what's called brand blackmail. Mm-hmm. Because consumers can vote with their feet. And social media amplifies groups of concern. And they say, Nike, do you support Black Lives Matter too? PR department tries to stay out of it. Social media says you don't have a comment. Therefore, what have you got to hide? And it starts to escalate. Brand management, maybe a little young, maybe a little naive, says, oh, Mr. Chairman, we have to jump in and here have to make a statement. They jump in and make a statement. Then there's a riot. Then somebody gets killed. And then Nike are in this position going, should we be in or should we be out? Same people that made an erratic decision to get in because they didn't have the confidence to stand up for the brand now don't have the confidence to get it out. Mm-hmm. For me, brand association to causes is a big strategic think tank. So you can have corporate social responsibility and align yourself with these things without rolling up your sleeves and getting deep involved in what's going on. Because they're all in their infancy and you do not know where they're going to go. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's stand back, watch, understand what you're learning from it, implement it within the company and support it where you can, but you don't have to get out on the street because you don't know where that crowd's going to grow and it's going to take your brand with it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's really, really good advice. And I think a lot of brands maybe should reevaluate whether or not they want that free PR.
Yeah.
One thing I want to switch to is because you were talking about your how you are all, you know, in one country, next country, third country. And Rail's a little different because I've been asked for a office photo and a team photo for an article for Rail. We don't have that. Can you explain the structure of how Rail is different?
Sort of takes the best that the world has to offer. And because of COVID, doesn't have to self-justify an office. Mm-hmm. When we started Rail in March, first month of COVID, everybody went into lockdown. We had no choice. We could not get a corporate building because nobody was going to be there. So I took the decision, we are going to be work from homers. It has helped form our culture better for the 21st century than if we were a massive corporate building in the center of London. Because mm-hmm. now I've got an overhead with nobody in it. I've got a whole bunch of people that want to be close next to each other, next to the coffee machine, and hate being working from home. We work from home. That's how Rail works. Now, will that change? Will we have to have a corporate office when we go public, when we're employing 1,000 people? I don't know. But at the moment, it doesn't suit our purposes. Time zones work in our favor. We've got developers in India that do the work and send it to our CTO based in Alberta, who gets up in the morning and calls me in Budapest. And we have our operational meeting, 5 o'clock in the morning, Calgary time, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Budapest time. I carry on working until 1 o'clock at night, some nights, to keep the time zone and keep the productivity going. But it means we can churn through opportunities and problems really, really quickly because we are literally using 24/7.
Mm-hmm. How many continents are we on now? Do we know?
Like five.
Five. We've got people working for us on five different continents.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. And you know, do we miss Christmas parties? Of course we do. Do we miss office chats around the water cooler? Of course we do. Do we miss social engagement? Of course we do. But you know, the way we're chatting here, it sort of feels like you're on the other side of the table.
Yeah, I was about to speak for yourself. I don't really miss that
stuff. But the nice thing is that this allows me to have, as a chief executive of a global company, a constant 24/7 open door policy. Mm-hmm. Because they'll WhatsApp me and say, can you jump on a Zoom or can you jump on Rails video? Of course I can. Do it now. Like we just did.
We just did.
I said, when do you want to have this call? What about now? Yep, do it.
Yeah, we do it when we can. And that's yep.
And I really have no idea where you are. It doesn't matter because I can see you beautifully. I can hear you beautifully. And it's personal and it's secure, which is quite nice because I haven't got people on the other side of the walls in an office building listening to what we're saying.
That's true.
And I haven't got anybody interrupting me.
However, this is being recorded for the podcast, so.
That's okay.
But for most meetings that do take place in the Rail sphere, we don't have people. It isn't being recorded. It is private. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Perfect. Okay.
And I just want to kind of, because I know that your time is very precious, and I just want to wrap up with what values do you want to align yourself in Rail? And because you don't do more than just Rail, so. What one thing can we attribute to everything that you touch?
empathy. I struggle in marketing. I probably, and it sounds arrogant, and that's why I'm saying empathy, I've probably forgotten most than our marketeers know. Mm-hmm. But I've got to back off. It's not my job. I'm the chief executive. Yes, I'm a global branding expert and I've written books and everything. It's not the point now. I've got to give people space and I've got to understand the capability of the new way of marketing that I don't know and I don't understand. So I've got to understand that and I've got to back away. And I've got to have empathy with people that are working very long hours for very little full rail at the moment because we're in a startup mode. We're putting so much effort into this for very little. And I've got to have empathy with them when they go, yeah, I can't do tomorrow. And I don't question it. Thank you for doing the last 4 days. The fact you can't do tomorrow, don't worry about it. And I've got to have empathy about what people want out of rail. Not everybody is a workaholic like me. Not everybody wants to spend and live every hour working like me. And I've made mistakes in personal life because I didn't have empathy for my previous wife. And I thought I was out trailblazing, making a gazillion dollars to bring home and feed the family. It's not what the family needed. They wanted me and I wasn't there. That's why it didn't work. Mm-hmm. So when I look at it now, the thing for me is, what do people want out of rail? They might want a lot of money. They might want fame. They just might want a solid, nice job that they're not going to lose. They might want networking. There's all sorts of things. And I think if the CEO and the business can align, I think it will make rail a far more relevant brand. Mm-hmm. So when we came up with rail, COVID hit and we were going to put rail on hold. And we took the opportunity to actually say, okay, if we're going to go out with the product as it is, you're right. The merchants don't want to save another couple of basis points and they don't want a new piece of technology. But what do they want at the moment? And that's the empathetic feeling that I think the business has got to have, which is, what do customers actually want? Not what do we want, not how do we make more money, but what can we do with corporate social responsibility to everybody that works with us, limited number of staff, but there's lots and lots of people as stakeholders, our shareholders who are investing a proportion of their life's money into the gamble of rail, and the people who are our merchants and customers. And I think if you can wrap that up into, it's not just about me making this widget or making better margin on the financial services. It's an understanding. And I think if you get time to sit down and think before speaking, you're going to have empathy. That's it.
I think it's a really great way to end this. Just, that's an amazing insight about leadership, about branding, about where businesses need to be, about how we tell our stories, because it's not our story, Good. It's the customer's Good. Story.
Good, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for taking this time, Nicholas, and I.
Absolute pleasure.
You do the best.
All right, thank you very much. Take care.
I feel fortunate to be working with a leader like Nicholas Jeffery, who has so many interesting stories working with incredible brands during his career in branding, technology, international banking, smart city strategy, big data, and now fintech. It's always a pleasure talking with him, and I am always blown away by his confidence, his vision, and his willingness to be open to new ideas. So you can follow him on LinkedIn and learn more about Rail at rail.com. That's RAYL.com. Thank you very much for joining me today on Brand Appeal, Brand Storytelling in the Digital Age. If you have a brand story that you would like to tell our audiences, please feel free to contact me through marketappeal.com. That's marketappeal.com.